Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
We are live.
Woohoo! Live, live, live. Banter, 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 banter.
No, live doesn't mean we have a life or just technically, you know, respirating organic organisms over here.
Respirating organic.
I'll take it. After New Year. Happy New Year's, everybody!
Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year's.
2017.
Ugh.
It's going to be a good year. Stay in pause.
Yes. Stay positive. So.
I'm electrically positive, technically.
Well, there you go. You're off to a good start.
Yes, I am. Thank you, Ions.
So, what did you guys get up to since the last time we recorded?
I finished up my campaign.
Oh, you finished it?
Yep.
Awesome.
I managed to kind of win, I guess. I did manage to kill the monk Scion in one hit from the main big bad.
Whoa.
Ooh.
He gets 4 or 5 hits, I forget which, and he rolled 20 for the first 2 rolls.
Wow.
So, and then the other 3 rolls all hit. So I managed to completely destroy him. Oh, he was also using a weapon that gets times 3 to the damage.
Okay.
So, well. Yeah. But the same round he dies, the other players complete the ritual that basically reboots the world. So, you know.
Oh, that's fun.
It was good timing. But he was very salty about it.
I can see why that might make somebody a little upset.
To be fair, technically everybody died as the world was reborn anyway, so it doesn't really matter that he died like 5 seconds earlier.
Okay, yeah.
I digress.
Yeah, well, whatever. It's all good.
Also, I converted a level 20 Lord of the Abyss to be their enemy.
Nice.
Didn't tell them that part.
Nice. Awesome.
Oh, boy.
What you guys?
Well, let's see. Since Christmas... Well, the week before Christmas, I ran the beginning part of the third book of the Adventure Path. So when they finish this book, they will be halfway done. And then when we're done with that, I get to take a break from running Pathfinder for a while. And I'm getting to run Immortal.
Ooh.
Oh, I've been dying for this so bad.
Sweet.
So yeah, there will be many updates about Immortal when we actually start playing that.
Cool, cool.
And
that's going to be scary, dude.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. Because I'm actually going to look at the new stuff that they did for 3rd edition. Because I've been playing it in the original edition only. And I've been playing that since the 90s. And they did a 2nd edition, which was really horrible. And not anything like the 1st edition. Like, they changed it so radically that it was impossible to tell that you were playing the same game. And enough people, I guess, were disheartened by it that they did a third edition, and third edition is closer to first edition, but with some new, like, updating mechanics so that things worked a little cleaner with more of the older school feel to it.
Ooh.
So it'll be neat to see what ends up being the case with that. So
that's going to be sweet. Yeah. I like it. That's going to be quite slick.
And then I got to go to D.C. for New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
And the day before, I got to hang out with Jules.
And
in her abode.
Yep. Yeah, you got to see that wreck.
Whatever.
It's like, how many computers do you have? Don't ask.
I don't know. I saw four laptops in your office.
Four laptops, a desktop, and the gaming rig downstairs.
Yeah.
And a partridge and a pear tree.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but, you know, it was, oh my God, it was so much fun.
Yeah, it was. It was a blast. My God.
Yeah, it's kind of those, I'm not as young as I used to be, so it's the, you know, I kind of had a realization I'm old. I'm looking at the clock. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so late. I have to get some sleep. I got, you know, a lot of us now when we do like game night or something else, like, oh yeah, we'll try and wrap up around 11, no later than midnight, because we all have to get up early for work the next day. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we're responsible adults.
Yeah, well, we were up until, I looked at my phone when I went to bed. It was 2:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I had gone to sleep at 2:30 the night before, having stayed up drinking with my brother-in-law for many hours, and I had been up for like 20 hours when I finally fell asleep the night before. So then I had like part of a day, and then I went and hung out with you guys for like a day.
Totally worth it.
Oh yeah.
Totally worth it.
Totally going to figure out a way to get back up there and hang out again for like a weekend or something. Except yeah, that time I may fly up.
We're on the dullest grid, dude.
I know, because you're so close. I might just fly in to the airport right there and then not have to.
The best thing about it, too, is that because we're on the dullest grid, I've been in the house 6 years. We lost power once for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
In 6 years we've been here, which is nice.
Yeah.
So there's a little bonus right there. And depending on when you come up, you know, we do have the Air and Space Museum local.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you guys had a cooler holiday than I did, you know.
Oh.
Luckies. Well, you're cooler people, you know. You know, you got that slick swagger thing going. No, I'm not kidding. It's, you know, pretty much I spent some of the time listening to Zippy and my buddy Peter chit-chatting about the 5th edition. It's not really chit-chatting. You know how it goes, where you start talking about some of the weirdest builds you can do. You know, after you come up, oh, this is my concept, and you bounce ideas off your buddy. And then they started coming up with the weirdest ideas, and I'm looking at them, I'm like, who are you deranged people?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's still, hopefully, I am praying my husband will do this. Because 5th Ed, there's a bit of a flavor difference, which is okay, but I said 3.5 is, you know, where I made a lot of my friends, you know, when doing a lot of the D&D thing, but using 5th Ed, Zippy wants to run a Discworld game.
Ooh,
fun.
Oh, yeah. I want him to do it where it's just like, oh, it's like, we're sorry. There's, you know, mayor of the town comes up. Like, we did everything we could. We can't get these ruffians out. And they're like, you didn't. It's like, yes, I hired adventurers. They're like, do you realize what they did last time at the tavern? Oh, you know, and it's goofy stuff. And I want to see where he goes with it. It's like, Zendad, you know what to do.
Yeah, it'll be great.
You know, when we were setting up for that Shadowrun thing, you know, and I was hearing you two howling downstairs with, like, laughter. And I'm like, and I'm I'm here covered up in cords and tangled and everything else.
Yeah.
Totally awesome, though. So it's just, heck, you know what? Maybe next time you come up and visit, we'll get some of my buddies over and we'll play. We'll have him run it.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, because, you know, every GM has a unique personality. And since he's kind of a comedian slash jester.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are like, oh, you know, like the Marcus Fenix gruff or, you know, like the Galadriel kind of ethereal. What happens when you get a crass comic?
Yeah. Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think we're gonna try to get right into our main topic, which
mm-hmm.
was voted on by the one patron.
Which was which?
Eric DeMage.
Yeah, I know that guy.
Chose this as the main topic for this show. Because as one of the patrons, he gets to have input on what shows he'd like to see. And if you put your money in the pot, then you can have a say too.
Yeah, throw a couple shekels in the kitty, see what happens.
Yeah.
Find out what species we liked in certain D&D campaigns. See if we like dealing with certain runs in Shadowrun. Whatever you want as a topic. We'll do it.
What is the goofiest? It's like, how do you handle certain topics? How do you bring up certain topics? What happens when everyone starts corpsing?
Yeah.
You know, so, you're running a serious game and then someone farts and we're laughing for a half hour.
Yeah. So we're going to start doing some of those as patrons pick stuff. And eventually, I'm hoping this month we can actually get Eric on the show to do a hangout and talk with him about gaming and other such fun things. So be ready and listening for that one, folks. But this topic is organizing for your game and how you do it. I use a lot of bits to organize for my games.
Oh, I'm seeing your prep doc here, and it's a lot more than I use.
Yeah. Well, okay. Since you seem to have the easiest one, what do you use?
My primary tool for organizing my game is OneNote. It's a Microsoft program, for those of you who haven't heard of it. It comes with most versions of Microsoft Office. You probably haven't installed. You probably have never used it.
Okay. But
it's a lot like a kind of more well-known Evernote program, in that you have a notebook. You can store sections, different pages, store images, store Excel documents, Word documents, whatever. And basically, for me, it's a very helpful way of organizing what NPCs I'm going to throw at my players, link from that segment to posts I've written inside of the OneNote for lore or world building or things like that.
Okay.
Essentially, it's kind of a one-stop shop for me.
Okay, so it is a lot like Evernote.
Mm-hmm.
Which that is
I love Evernote.
That is one that I have seen several different people talk about for doing game prep and organizing things for your game. And it's one that I've actually seriously considered sitting down and trying to figure out how to use. Because when you see my list of things that I use, you will understand that why I need to have a general source spot.
Oh, yeah. But for me, though, because I've been using Evernote for my, you know, for my regular life so much, it's a little weird. I can't use it for running games, but I might actually use one. I might look at trying OneNote because it's a completely different program that does the same thing, but it's not like I already have Evernote all set up for like all the stuff in my life. Like, okay, here's my registration code for Origins. Here's my confirmation code for my hotel. Here's you know, here's my the network, names of the networks and who's on and who I gave stuff.
I also use OneNote to organize my trips to Dragon Con in terms of flight numbers and registration numbers, so I'm right there with you with that.
Yeah, but for me, trying to put like game stuff into it, I'd need another instance of it so that way I could keep them separate. It'd be a little too... I kind of like to compartmentalize.
Yeah.
Well, that's the nice thing about OneNote is that it's... I found it kind of rough having multiple notes open in Evernote or multiple notebooks in Evernote. But OneNote, it's a lot easier to kind of split up your notebooks. To me, at least.
Okay.
You know, for me, though, it's... You know, I like to have... it. Like, if I had two instances of OneNote, or it's like... Or a little Sadie, you know, like a mega over umbrella file. It's like, okay, this is for... But how Evernote's set up and how I've started using it, it's very difficult for me to kind of change it, I guess. That's just me, though. Yeah, that's just the way.
Okay.
Yeah. I might... I guess it's because I was using Evernote as a organizational tool so long, it's kind of how I see it.
Okay.
So yeah. I'm going to start playing with OneNote. I blame you. I blame you. It's all your fault. I'm going to be doing more tech stuff.
Oh, just wait. Wait till you see my list.
Does all OneNote right. have like a refer a friend program I could use?
So, since you started up, Jules, what do you actually use?
All right. I swear by HeroLab. I love it. It doesn't have all the games out there, but it's a really nice way you can generate, you know, you can play around with character building and, you know, you can kind of like hover over, like if you're building like a Pathfinder character, Mutants and Mastermind, Shadowrun, you name it. So it's really easy to make an NPC, or if you got a new player, it's a good way to actually, it's like, because if they kind of like either if they're all paper, you can just print out a blank sheet. But the nice thing about it is if you're pulling up something and they don't know what it means, you can hover over it, whatever it is, and it'll tell you what book, what page.
Oh, you know what's even nicer with HeroLab?
That's pretty good.
HeroLab has this great feature in it, and what? I swear what? By this. It's when you're printing out character sheets. When you're printing
you can print out
portfolios, you can print details. So if you have like a class ability, it prints out the class ability for you.
I love that. Yeah.
And you can do it for all of your spells. You can do summary versions or the full version. It's
exactly.
It is great for like if you don't want to have to go anywhere else but that one thing.
It's a one-stop shop.
It's right there.
Yeah, it's a little expensive to keep buying the licenses, but also considering how much you get out of it, I actually
it's worth
really,
every bit.
Oh, yeah. But for me, and I picked this up from Zippy, what he has and what I've started using, we have a notebook, okay? When you're looking at it normally and you open up like the front cover, it's like, this is where the notes are on the campaign and ideas and NPCs and rough outlines of maps and all that other stuff. But then you take the notebook, flip it upside down, and go to the back. So this is where you put in what the players did, possible consequences, possible, you know, chain reactions, effects, stuff like that. So you have, so pretty much it's like you're getting, it's like, you know, so-and-so, the idiot, decided to burn down the forest because he couldn't find the forest through the trees or some stuff, and he got angry and he burned everything down. Oh, well, you know what? That action's going to have a consequence. So, you know, you flip the book over and you write in the back upside down. So it kind of, it's a very harsh break between your planning and then you have kind of like the consequences.
Sure.
And it's, and it, you know, and you meet in the middle and it's really because of how it's done. So he's got the TARDIS, a little mini notebook. So on the, you know, front where it looks normal, you know, everything's fine. You flip it over in the backside, it's just, you know, flat blue. So depending on what he's looking for, it's a really good way to organize it.
Sure. Neat. That's cool.
Yeah. The other one is we all, and one of the best things we did is we went out, went to the dollar store, got a ton of just yellow sticky notes. Each player has a pack of sticky notes, and I went out and I actually got each player a mini notebook for them to make notes of, like, say if they can never remember any characters' names, they can always just write it down, or certain combos of abilities, if they're playing some that can chain, it's just like, oh, this is what I did, this was the chain, you know, notes for their stuff. But the sticky notes is for ninja notes. So the GM has a set, and he's just like, oh, you made your spot check. He puts on a ninja note. The sticky note allows it to fold over and stick, and he just hands it to them. And they can write a response back. We can ninja note each other for trying to plot something, you know. And it's a really effective way of communicating private information, but, you know, you're not like, okay, let's get up. We walk to the living room, and we might hear something, but, you know, write it down in ninja note, and it stickies together, you know.
Yeah.
It actually adds, especially if you're, you know, doing like something in like a D&D game and you're sneaking into the keep.
Yeah.
You know, it actually kind of adds a little bit to that atmosphere too.
Sure.
I feel like that works for D&D, but if you're doing something like Shadowrun or something high tech, you just need to send text across the phone and hope your latency doesn't hit too bad.
Unfortunately, though, if you also have somebody who is a, well, either her phone doesn't work very well, you know. She, in real life, one of my buddies has gremlins. But, or,
yeah,
you know.
Have you ever met Noel? That boy's got some of the worst gremlins I've ever met.
I don't know what you're talking about. Nope.
Am I the only one here that's actually pretty much a literal technomancer at this point?
Yeah.
Hey, I am sometimes.
Hey, I blew my... I told you what happened to my computer, and you think it's a kernel failure. So, I just have to find something to do with that. So,
well, I could. The thing is, like, you know, give me your stuff. I'll slave it and pull whatever the heck I can off of it if you want.
We'll do that. Yeah. We'll worry about that later.
Yeah, but you know it's like I like to do certain types of high tech, but. You know, like having like Hero Lab and I can't remember what it was, but there was a Kickstarter not too long ago about, you know, it's graph paper, but it's 3D graph papers. Because remember, you would use regular graph paper and, you know, like, okay, you know, go here.
Oh, the isometric?
This, yeah.
That's gaming paper.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just finished that Kickstarter up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have absolutely no artistic ability, and that looking at that would probably get me a little dizzy. But because I can't draw for diddly.
Yeah, well.
But, you know, there's, I'm trying to remember the name of it, but there's also, you can go on to DriveThruRPG, and there's a guy who actually uses AutoCAD. She was an architect / drafts person, you know, did all the blueprinty stuff.
Yeah.
And she used in her free time, she made all these really, really awesome, you know, it's like, oh, this is a floor plan for a Victorian house, cyber cafe, park.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. They are abso-frickin-lutely brilliant. I love them. I actually have the name of them. Give me 5 seconds. Excuse me. Okay.
2 Mississippi. 3 yeah. Mississippi.
I'm sorry. I'm sniffing my brains out. I know none of you guys got me sick.
I know. But,
no, it's called Bunny Rat Modern Floor Plans, and they've got
Yeah, you know what? I think I've Charles seen some and Crystal of those.
White. Yeah, I have a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
You know, Fabled Environments, I think, is the company. But, you know, if you bring in the if you bring in the PDF, you know, they actually have instructions on, okay, how do you print this?
Yeah.
All right. What if, here's the thing. You bring this in, you know, to Staples or something, they're not going to get mad at you. Here's the thing. As long as you show them this in the PDF, you're okay.
Yeah.
And I like that they put that in preemptively because of that whole, you know, you don't want to do that reproduction and copyright and this and that and the other.
Yep.
That was awesome, classy about them.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have it done not just in just, okay, a singular print, but they have it broken up in tile systems, with and without lettering, with and without grid. You know, it's worth it.
Yeah.
You know, because I can't draw.
So, well, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that you pick up given time.
No, my stick figures have polio.
Well, we'll have to work on that. So
you've seen my tremors. Come on.
I know. I know. All right. So I'm gonna hit you with what I use. And I use an actual combination of electronic and physical to organize for my games.
All right, you might want to pause the podcast just for a second so you can get a pen and paper and start making your list, guys. You've got a really awesome combo here. You don't want to miss a bit.
So, I have multiple notebooks, but the big ones that I have is I have a world design notebook for whatever game world I'm working on. And that has just the stuff that I need. So it's locations, all of the physical things that I need to be able to like flip through at the table quickly because I've organized it in a way that works for me. Then I also have a kind of like, this is stuff that the players have figured out sort of thing that I always try to keep up to date. And then I usually have a printout of whatever I'm actually running at the table. Like that night, I'll have like everything all printed out so that I have physical copies.
Mm-hmm.
Then, electronically, what I do beforehand, I make extensive use of Google Docs. Mm-hmm. I use Box to store all of that information. It's just like Dropbox, but it's one that I've used for so long that I have a ridiculous, like what you have in Dropbox, I have in Box, and I haven't paid for my Box account.
Nice.
It's ridiculous, because I've had it for so long, and I've said, hey, if you get this, then we'll both get some more memory, and I've got something like 40 gigs or 50 gigs of space on my Box account. So I store books, everything, PDFs for all of that. All of my gaming stuff I try to keep it on the cloud so that I can access it through my phone, through my tablet, through my computer, wherever I'm at. Then I also use Scrivener, which is...
I'm confused.
Scrivener...
Fantastic program.
It is for writing books.
Yes, you were using it to write the wrong thing. But I appreciate
it's used to organize books for authors. They use it as a writing implement. It was designed for that. But if you
I literally use it for that.
Yeah. But if you use it from a different perspective, you can create your entire game world using Scrivener, and you can put notes, all of these things that are all out there that are part of your game design, you can actually do in Scrivener and have it all there.
Well, that's right, because Scrivener has sections for world design, background lore for the book you're writing.
Exactly.
Which, incidentally, stuff that comes in an RPG setting is world design.
Yeah, so I use it like crazy. And you can do different projects. So you could have your Shadowrun game, all of that information in Scrivener. And then you can have another one for like your D&D game and another one for your World of Darkness game. And you can do all of them inside Scrivener. That is like my compilation point for everything. And then I have multiple other apps that I use. Like I have a journal app, so I can I can type things on my tablet when I don't have it connected because I'm sitting in a truck working. Well, I just stopped for my lunch or whatever, and if I got an idea, I can just type it up on my tablet real quick, and it stores it in my journal, and then I can bring it home, and I can put it in Scrivener or my Google Docs or whatever. And I also have multiple name generator apps because I am the worst. I am literally the worst person for coming up with names. There's a joke at our table that I have actually named someone Steve the Mage in a D&D game. Well, and I think he was an elf.
We actually had something like that, but the player couldn't come up with a name. He says he was James the Cleric. So we called him James. It sounded a little bit more fantasy-like.
Yeah. No, no, it was Steve. It was straight up Steve, the elven mage. You know, I'm horrible at it. So as a general rule, I tend to have, in that notebook, I have things like, I'll go through and I'll hit that name generator app and I'll be like, give me 50 fantasy names, 50 science fiction names, 50 of this name. And I actually have a book that you can't find it anymore, but it generates upwards of 20 million names. And it covers almost every nationality on the planet. So it's amazing. And I got it for like $5.
That's pretty cool.
I've had it since the 80s. And I still use it today. So in addition to all of those, I still have two other things that I use. I also use another one that's called Workflowy. And Workflowy is kind of cool because it's kind of like a to-do list, but it doesn't have to be just for how to-do lists. You can also write entire ideas and strings of ideas and keep them all together in this almost just bullet point way. It's very kind of weird to use until you use it a bit, and then you're just like, oh my god, this is like the coolest thing ever. The problem with Workflowy is that unless you pay for an account, you can only do so many like entries in a day or in a month, something like that. And the other one that I use is Pinterest, because Pinterest is a godsend for organizing photo references.
Oh, yeah.
And art references. And I use it all the time. I love drawing maps. But if I can pull up a map that I've already saved on Pinterest and I can just print that page out and make some edits that are what I will see, and then I can create the map on a bigger sheet later, that's what I'll do. So I use Pinterest like all the time. Actually, Seize the GM has a Pinterest page for those people that want to go see some of the things that I've been pinning. That's some of the stuff that I do, and I put that together just for people to pull things from as a GM. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
I also have two new ones that I just downloaded, but I haven't had a chance to play with yet. One is called Character Planner, and the other is called Quest Tracker. And they're both for Android. I don't know if they're available on the iTunes Store or not. But Character Planner is for designing your individual characters. It is used, from what it looks like, predominantly for authors, but I can see where it would be a great way to categorize and catalog all of your NPCs that you're going to use in games. So that's kind of what I'm going to end up probably using it for. And Quest Tracker is, it tracks when you, like, all of the ideas that you have for adventures and quests and stuff, and, like, who the big bad can be, and, you know, some of the stuff that you would need for that. It's kind of just like a shorthand version of what it would be, and then you'd have to flesh it out more, but it's a way to track those from the looks of it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I use a lot of stuff. And each campaign has its own notebook. Like, physical notebooks. My wife yells at me because, like, I have, like, 9 notebooks laying around the house, and she's like, can we get rid of this? I'm like, no, I've got this thing, one page that's written in there, and I need that one page.
I got another thing, yeah.
So she will tear that page out and then throw the notebook away. Which is great, because otherwise I would just have way too many notebooks laying all over the house. So. But yeah, that's how I organize for a game. And that doesn't include, like, yeah, I use Hero Labs a ton.
Oh, yeah.
Too. So I use all kinds of stuff. I am the most eclectic. So that's why I need to try something like OneNote or Evernote, which is, you know, one of those things I've seriously considered doing. Is playing around with Evernote.
Sweet.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right. I think we're ready to move on and call this a wrapped topic. Because, yeah, we've talked about a lot of different ways to do things. So,
yeah. Put a bow on it.
It is it's done. Shiny.
If you'd like to hear more about it, though, you can always become a patron and ask us to cover the topic again.
Ask us something specific.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, about any of those, because I can talk about any of those for like a whole episode.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to stat blocks.
And now we enter stat blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight.
You first, son.
Oh, God, I've been talking already a lot. Okay. All right, fine. You got me.
It's worse.
Because usually I push that off onto everybody else, so.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was afraid. I'm going to get in there, and I'm just going to snipe it.
Snipe it. All right. Well, this is... I created something I call the Archivist. And the Archivist is one part pack rat, one part organizer, and two parts salesman. Or saleswoman. Gender neutral here. The Archivist can or has the actual item you are looking for, or has a reasonable facsimile of it. Facsimile of it. It might seem like any old shopkeeper or black market op is like this, but they're only parts of this person. While it may take time for someone else to get or build the thing that you're looking for, the Archivist has it on hand when you need it. So I just wrote up like a little thing on an Archivist that I came up with. And her name on the street is Bookworm, because she wears glasses. Now, she has all the documents that you will ever need to jump borders, even set up like a false front so that it seems like you're that guy that everyone trusts. Now, the reason is she found a stockpile of old forms that people have used but are in the process of kind of phasing them out. As old pieces pass out of favor, she adds new things to her list and keeps herself from becoming obsolete.
Neat. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
All right, Justin.
All righty. We're continuing in the catalog again, and this time we're talking about the voucher. Travel is a difficult task, regardless of location, destination, and chrono point in the possibility stream. But now, the task of arranging your transportation is gone with the purchase of the voucher. The voucher immediately becomes the ticket, token, currency, or mark needed to identify the holder as a valid rider on a chosen method of transportation. Torn, stamped, or otherwise damaged, the voucher doesn't hinder its ability to provide convincing evidence of the rider's right to travel. This includes royal parades, funeral barges, secret transportation jets, and more. Enjoy your trip today with a voucher. Warning, the voucher expires immediately on arrival at a destination, and its apparent false nature becomes extremely evident to all those who have handled it, including Knights, Transportation Administration, Computer Security Systems, and secretive military agents. The catalog does not guarantee safety for the user after use of the voucher, nor are they responsible for the criminal charges or incarcerations that may occur. The voucher. Here, there, everywhere. Order of caution. All purchases are recorded, and authorities will be notified.
Nice.
That was brilliant.
Nice.
I'm enjoying the series.
Oh my god, that's so cool.
That is good.
It reminded me of Zork, you know, like the Froboz Electric.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Froboz Electric. We don't make things that suck. We make things that suck permanently.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it reminded me of.
My inspiration for these kind of comes from the Warehouse 23 basement thing, which I think was inspired by Zork. So,
okay, that explains it then. That's cool.
It's a circle.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, Chrissy, we already know that you don't have one for us tonight. It's a shame.
Oh, is it time to bet again? Or
No.
She had a rough... she didn't get home until like 2 hours or like an hour before we started recording. So she had no time. And time, okay. I understand, is a big deal. So we will not hold this against her.
This time, but next this time.
No. I already told Zendad. I already told him.
She's got one.
What I had. I just didn't have time to write it up. And right. I don't want to ramble and, you know.
So, yeah.
And the thing is, like, you guys seem to like it when I delve a little to the twisted.
Sure.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. So the next one hopefully will melt your brains.
Yeah. All right. So next we are going to go right into Lexicon.
Lexicon, where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary.
Now, our word today is totem. I know it seems fairly simple. It is a noun. Now, do you guys know what the definition of totem is?
Well, it's basically kind of a symbol, kind of a guide point for spirituality, sometimes an animal, sometimes a plant, sometimes kind of a aspect or supernatural kind of thing?
Well, those can be totems. The definition of a totem is an object as an animal or plant serving as an emblem of a family or clan and often as a reminder of its ancestry. Now, these are usually carved or painted representations of such an object. And it can also be like a family or clan identified by a common totemic object. And the second definition is one that serves as an emblem or revered symbol.
Yeah, a lot of people seem to conflagrate totem and spirit animal.
Yes.
They're not really the same thing.
No, but they can be.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a fun, we're going to talk about this, and you'll see why. But totem in a sentence, the shaman's totem was otter. Fairly simple. And I used it specifically in that way for a reason, because the origin and etymology of totem is it only was officially its first official use that is recorded by anyone that speaks English is 1776. because the origin is from... now, I'm probably going to mispronounce the tribe, so just deal with that for right now. But it's
I'll fix it.
Ojibwa.
Yeah. And Ojibwa, yeah.
It is...
Hey, you got it.
Oto Teet Men, which is his totem. And so, now... The reason why this is only from 1776 is that's when America was founded.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually comes from this branch of the Algonquin language that's spoken by the Native American tribes from the regions around Lake Superior. The most basic form of the word in Ojibwa is believed to be oat. But 18th century English speakers encountered it as Oto Men, which is his totem, which became
Oto Teman. Yeah, Oto Teman.
It became our word of totem. And in its most specific sense, totem refers to the emblematic depiction of an animal or plant that gave the clans or a family the name that they served as a reminder of their ancestry. So it's also used pretty broadly after that fact. But yeah, so this is such a crazy word because it's around for a long time. But not in America. It was used in America, but just not when any English speakers were around.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I thought that was kind of cool because we get a little history lesson here with this word.
I didn't pick my shout out to tie into that, but still, it was awesome. Completely rando.
That is awesome. Well, since we're talking about shout outs, let's go ahead and tackle that bad boy right there. So, go ahead, Jules. What you got?
All right. I found it's called the Exploring Series. It's one of the most awesome YouTube channels I've come across. They, like, not everything is all, exploring, but they have exploring history. The Chernobyl incident, stuff like that. They have Exploring Middle Earth, Morgoth, and dragons and Balrogs, and the creation of Arda. They have Exploring the Cthulhu Mythos, and they go into the Yellow King, Cthulhu, the Star Children, like all the great old ones. And they go into a little bit of history, where they come from, what part of the mythos. You know, I mean, granted, right now he has a lot of just also a couple of gaming casts on there, but his exploring series is really good. You know, creatures, the race of Yith for Cthulhu, and they have artist depictions, and they actually go into what artists added what to which part of the mythos, or where did I get this bit of history from? You know, it was, you know, it's nice. Bite-sized, and he's doing different ones. I mean... he had, like, Exploring History, Jack the Ripper. You know, you're like, what the... And Exploring Cthulhu, Nyarlathotep. And he goes, why do I like this character? Or, you know, where is it referenced? So it's, for me, I lost sleep because I was like, ah, okay, that's pretty cool. They're about 10, they're like between 5 and 10 minutes, depending on what it is. And I'm watching, I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And then I go look stuff up, and then I'd watch the next one, and then I go look more stuff up, and then I'm like, it's 4 a.m, I need to go to bed.
Yeah, see, these are the sorts of things that you need to have for world building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just all these little bits that you can pull from and use. Yeah, those are great. I love things like that.
Yeah, it seems like the channel, it looks almost like it started out as a Let's Play. And, you know, way back, I don't know exactly, maybe a year, maybe 2 years ago, he did like exploring these history and mythos. And I'm like, I want him to get more stuff to keep doing it because I want to see what else he'll dive into.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
Oh, yeah. And I love that he picks all these really cool art picks for like Middle Earth or the Cthulhu mythos.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I loved it. I was just like, oh, this is the cool.
That is cool.
Mm-hmm. So I want him to make more stuff, and I want to see what other worlds he can do a deep dive on. You know, because I would, oh, that would just, like, imagine doing, like, a deep dive into the world of Blade Runner.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. Or something like, or, like, pretty much the whole, or maybe, like, the whole Philip K. Dick, the whole Philip K. Dick universe, or Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah.
Those kind of worlds that he created, or, you know, Bryn, you know, with the Uplift series.
Yes.
Can you imagine that?
That series is so good.
You know, so, sorry, I found this because I was just like, and it was a random suggestion I found on the front of YouTube. I'm like, this is cool. And I just lost, huh?
Sometimes those work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just, I was blown away. I'm like, okay, so that didn't actually come from H.P. Lovecraft. That came from another guy who did this. And I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. Especially when you're dealing with mythos, like mm-hmm. Cthulhu stuff. It's like there's like seven or eight guys that it could be from. Because they were all writing in this world that Lovecraft had created. But he was like one of the first people to really like go in and just be like, okay, this is Creative Commons. Just don't shit the bed.
Yeah, and he actually goes into, and the nice thing about it, like when he started doing this, at least with the Cthulhu mythos, he's like, it's written to be almost nigh impossible to speak.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it's not written for normal, it's not written for human mouths.
Yeah, but he goes into, and that's why, but he's like, well, Lovecraft said this, but other people said this, and maybe, so I'm going to go with what most people recognize, at least auditorily, but here's what the other one sounded like.
Yeah.
They're little bits. I mean, granted, it looks mostly like a Let's Play on the rest of his stuff, but his exploring series is phenomenal. And they're fun. So,
that is really cool.
Link in the show notes. It's like, if you like his Let's Plays, all right, but give this guy some credit, you know, do some cool comments on his exploring series, because, you know, let's see what else he can do, because this guy is, it's very smart. It's smartly done.
I've got to seriously add that to my my channels.
Sounds pretty cool. I'm going to add it too, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. Link is in the doobly-doo, so, you know, enjoy yourself, folks.
All right. Justin, what you got?
Oh, man, it has been like a week of nothing. Well,
week of nothing?
I mean, outside of gaming, it's been mostly just kind of edging out playing video games. So, okay. One shout-out would be kind of going back to our previous episode where we were talking about sources of inspiration and whatnot.
Okay.
We did, over the holidays, watch Studio Ghibli films. Okay. A couple of them. That got me thinking in terms of consistency of magic and things like that in settings. So, shout out to Howl's Moving Castle and Spirited Away. Great movies, good inspiration for just fantasy settings in general. And definitely an interesting take on, kind of doing a twist on modern day meets fantasy.
Yeah, Ponyo actually was one of the coolest Little Mermaid takes I'd ever seen.
Yeah. My daughter loves that movie.
Yeah. Do not watch Grave of the Fireflies without a basket of kittens for afterwards. Don't. No, because you'll need to cuddle the basket of kittens.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so well done, though. Oh. Yeah. And bonus point, Adam Savage of Mythbusters loves Miyazaki films. He has cosplayed as No Face, and he has cosplayed as Totoro, so.
I particularly love his story of when he cosplayed as No Face, and he was giving out little chocolate coins to people.
Gold wrapped chocolate coins.
Angrily giving them back to him.
Oh, that's because hilarious.
Because you don't take gold from No Face.
Yep.
And that realization just blew him away, and he loved it. He thought it was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
People were playing along.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what they're supposed to do, you know? All right. Well, I have two shout outs.
Two shout outs? Shoot, I didn't even need one this week.
Two. One is a podcast. And I don't think I've ever talked about this one in particular. And the other one is it's an old school campaign for second edition D&D. So the podcast first. The podcast is called the Mysteries Abound podcast. And the guy's from Australia. And it talks about weird, like, myth and cryptid things. And he pulls stuff. It's a lot of, like, aggregating stuff from all over the web that's strange and weird. And he also talks about it as well. So it's really fun. Like, he did this one, this week's was on Dragons in Great Britain. And neat. How, like, even up into, like, the 30s and 40s, people were reporting dragons in Great Britain. Like, 1930s and 1940s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
less than 100 years ago. Wow, that's...
Yeah. And because the myths come from so many places. I mean, there are more myths about dragons than there are about things like vampires, even.
Ooh.
So, I mean, and he actually has written a book on this, like dragons all over the world. So, I mean, this one was really good. But he'll do stuff about, like, he did Mothman and just random other bits and pieces. And it's really good. And it's a ton of fun. And he's got an Australian accent, which doesn't hurt. So, and the second one is, and I said it's an old school campaign for second edition D&D. It's called Night Below.
Ooh, sounds spiffy.
It is an Underdark game. Now, it is not Forgotten Realms Underdark. This is... not a specific world, Underdark.
Ooh.
So it's kind of general, which is really nice. And I had bought the original box set when it first came out. And I loved it. Even then. And over the 20 years since I bought it, I have subsequently lost it. And I found it on Amazon. It's only $90. Which I cannot justify paying.
Yeah.
So I've been looking for trying to find PDFs of it, like legitimate PDFs. And if I find a legitimate PDF that you can purchase somewhere, I will let people know where that is. But my local used bookstore has had bits of it, like they'll, because it's like three books and like multiple poster maps and everything else for this box set. And I've found most of the, I think I've got all the books, but I haven't been able to find the poster maps anymore, which I don't think I'll ever find those, but I've been rereading it because I want to do, after I'm done with finishing my Pathfinder game that I've got right now, I want to do something Underdark related. So I'm like mining different ideas and stuff. And there's even like in that book, there's references to other elves that live underground that are not drow.
Neat.
Spiffy.
Yeah. And they're like neutrally aligned instead of like evil or good. So it's kind of interesting to see something like that. So, yeah, it's really cool. And if you really want to spend the $90, there's a link in the doodly-doo with it to the Amazon page where you can buy it. So if you want to buy that bad boy, go for it. It's worth about, in my book, it's probably worth about $50, which is twice what the original box set costs. So it's worth every bit, but I don't think it's worth quite what that is. But it's because it's now a very limited edition, like, collector's item. So.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So, yeah, I think that wraps it up for me. And we've gone a little long this one. Not too bad, but
we'll get it.
We're right about an hour. So I think we're going to call this good. And it has been fun to get back in the saddle after a couple of weeks off with the holidays. And we will be hitting this hard again. I have to clean up a couple of back episodes that we need to get fixed, and those should be hitting the feed here in the next couple of days, hopefully, and we will get everything back on schedule for our weekly schedule again, folks. So it has been fun.
Until next time. Happy New Year, everybody.
All right, well, I think that's going to call it a show, folks. So let that outro stuff play and
see you next episode.
Yep. Where we will let somebody know what it's going to be. We have no idea yet, folks. We'll figure that out, though, in the next couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yes. Have a good one, guys.
Bye, y'all.
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are at Zended,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at No Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at Seize the GM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at zended@seizethegm.com.
Me at jules@seizethegm.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by The Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 3.0, Unported License.